She inspires, educates, and informs. She talks the talk and walks the walk. She doesn't tell you what to think. She just wants you to. She's Mrs. Green. And this is Mrs. Green's World on the Mrs. Green's World Network. And now, Mrs. Green.
Welcome, everybody. I'm Gina Murphy Darling, and you are listening to Mrs. Green's World, an inspirational and informative place where we don't tell you what to think, we just want you to. Thanks so much for joining us, and thanks to the sponsor of this show, the Fairfax Companies. They are true leaders in the business of sustainability. They're dedicated to improving the environment through creative and innovative business practices and are leaders in the construction waste industry, such an important industry that we have to always take a look at, demonstrating that it is possible to implement sustainable business practices profitably. So people, profit, planet. We always want to shout out that we appreciate their support of our mission and vision and the great work they do for our community and the planet. Thank you, the Fairfax Companies. To find out more about them and their important work, you can visit them at thefairfaxcompanies.com. So take a deep breath, everybody. Get ready for yet another important and informative show about a topic very near and dear to my heart and critical to the Mrs. Green's World mission. It's about women, keepers of the earth. And joining me for this next hour is a return guest, and I'm thrilled to have her back, Osprey Oriel Lake. She is the co-founder and executive director of WECAN, Women's Earth and Climate Action Network. Osprey works nationally and internationally with grassroots and indigenous leaders, policymakers, and scientists to promote climate justice, resilient communities, and a just transition to a clean energy future. This woman never sleeps. I am sure of that. She is co-chair of international advocacy for the Global Alliance for the Rights of Nature and the visionary behind the International Women's Earth and Climate Summit, which brought together 100 women leaders from around the world to draft and implement a women's climate action agenda. And these are just some of her many accomplishments, trust me. Osprey, it's been way too long, my friend, and it's great to have you back here to talk about the important work you're doing now.
Well, thank you so much for having me back, and it's always great to be in conversation with you. Thank you.
Our paths keep crossing and things keep growing, but it's not all good news, and we're going to talk about that too. So let's start with when you first came on the show, and I had to look that up, and it was almost 4 years ago, which blows my mind. We talked quite a bit about your book, Uprisings for the Earth, Reconnecting Culture and Nature, and, you know, it was quite a while ago in the Mrs. Green's World journey, and it was an impactful book for me, and I remember reading passages about it and where you lived and how you grow up, and I think it's our listeners like to know about the guests and about your journey. So would you share with us a little bit about those early day memories and what was shaping you to take this leadership role in the world when it comes to climate change?
Sure. You know, I think one of the things that has deeply impacted my life, and I think we all have different stories about this, which is, you know, places that we love in nature that we are watching, many of them being devastated through environmental degradation, extractive industries, whether that's fossil fuel or mining or others, and climate change. And, you know, I think that when we see places that we dearly love being destroyed, it really can activate that desire to do something about it. For me, it had to do with the beautiful redwood forest where I grew up along the coast of Mendocino in California, and the destruction to the ancient redwood forest and seeing areas that were completely clear-cut. And just breaking my heart, seeing these ancient trees, you know, being cut down. And in at such a rate, there's only about 4% of the redwoods left. So, you know, however we came to these issues, I think it's really important that, you know, we remember our roots in them and that we remember, you know, how we passionately got involved. And then, you know, over the years, I've become much more interested in how a lot of these issues are impacting people, and particularly now frontline grassroots and indigenous women all over the world who are hit first and worst by these degraded conditions. And so, you know, it's evolved for me to really understand the level of impact on people and planet, and really how to provide opportunities for advocacy and change in those arenas.
And I think that a lot of people have thoughts about the devastation they're seeing, of course, in our country, the whole Pacific Northwest burning for months and months, not weeks and weeks. The recent devastation in Northern California and the Sonoma region. And you have those moments and you care. But what you did was act. So now we have something called WECAN, Women's Earth and Climate Action Network. How did it come about? This is a three-part question. What was your purpose in starting it? And just go on a little bit about its evolution since you did start it.
Yeah, in 2009, as some of your listeners might know, was the big climate negotiations in Copenhagen. And it was supposed to be a pivotal moment for climate change. And it ended up being pretty much a big failure of governments to really respond at the level necessary that climate change is requiring. And after that period, I was out in the Redwoods actually going for a walk, which is where I go to renew and to think and listen to the forest. I got this terrible feeling, and instead of that calm feeling about being in nature and finding communion and quiet, I was just feeling like this screaming in my head and my heart from the land. And I knew that I really wanted to, you know, put my activist hat back on. I'd been involved in issues over many years and just really changed my life. I was, you know, doing artwork. I had just finished the book that you were discussing earlier. And I just felt like, no, this is time. It's all hands on deck. You know, this is turning into a colossal crisis and, in essence, an existential question for humanity. So I then began, you know, the process in different renditions of forming the Women's Earth and Climate Action Network, and finally formed it in 2013. There was a very large international conference where we brought together women from all over the world, both, you know, people who were well known like Vandana Shiva and Dr. Jane Goodall and former President of Ireland, Mary Robinson, the head of the UN climate talks, Cristiana Figueres, you know, just a whole host of women who are very involved in climate change, and then bringing them together with grassroots and indigenous women from countries around the world. And it was just quite an amazing event to really see from the top down and bottom up what could we do. And even though these indigenous women or grassroots women leaders, their names might not be known, they are equally prominent figures in their communities around the world as frontline fighters for waters, climate, air, forests. And that's when we formed the Women's Climate Action Agenda. That's what was really the backbone for that document. And I think the critical point is that, you know, when I started doing this work, I really began to do a lot of research around the relationship between both the fact that women are the most negatively impacted by environmental degradation and climate change, but also they're absolutely central to solutions. And there's just so many statistics which, you know, we share on our website and share in our documents around this connection between both how women are impacted, but also that you really cannot get to sustainability and a healthy planet without women getting more involved. And we sort of intuitively know that, but it's very important to understand that it's true. You know, as an example, between 60 and 80% of all household food production is done by women. So you really can't have sustainable farming without involving women. It's also true around water collection all over the world. You know, there's these studies that are always done by the UN and others around if you want to have sustainable water practices in a community, women have to be at the table because they're the ones who are, you know, collecting the water, observing what the water tables are doing, and other mechanisms for how we can, you know, be responsible about our water supply. So I think it just became very apparent that there needed to be an organization that really brought these themes of women and the environment together. And of course, there are many others. We're certainly not the first. There's many, many groups around the world that are working on this nexus of women and the environment who we're deeply allied with, and so glad that we could all work together collaboratively to really push this agenda forward.
And for me, and I think I have shared this with you when our paths have crossed in the past, but you never know when you drop that pebble in the pond what the ripple effect would be. And my being able to be in Schenectady, New York, you blessed me with an invitation, and it was life-changing for me. And I don't think it's dramatic to say that who knows what the Mrs. Green journey would have been like had I not gone there. And I'm not being overly dramatic. I mean, I got to meet Dr. Jane Goodall and actually talk with her. Having her on the show was a game changer for other guests, you know, like, who's Mrs. Green? Well, once we got people like Jane Goodall and Sylvia Earle and people like that, it gave an incredible amount of credibility to our guest roster. Plus, I got to interview Dr. Jane Goodall, which is, you know, an honor for anybody. So there are many, many ripple effects and contacts made and synapses, you know, connected and the green matrix activated because of that vision. I mean, it was a really exciting place to be. I remember when Vonda Nashiva came up next to me on the line for the appetizers, and I couldn't say a word. I just started crying because she is a really, really plays large in my list of heroes. So it really does speak volumes about the power of women because, you know, we probably had 30,000 listeners then, and now we have over 130,000 listeners. So it keeps, you know, it's just the gift that keeps on giving. So I wanted to honor you with that little testimonial because it really has made a difference for us and our team. So let's talk a little bit more about the impact of climate change on women. Why is it so more severe for them, or do you think it is, and are they impacted first, which makes them, to me, essential actors in local and global solutions? Why is it that women are so dramatically affected?
Yeah, well, first of all, congratulations on the growth of your listenership. That's really exciting, and that also, you know, speaks to your dedication. So, you know, congratulations on that. And I'm so glad that more and more people are listening to these issues.
Thank you. Me too. It's like, get the word out. That's what matters.
Yeah, no, we all need to be engaged. So that's really great.
Amy Goodman, look out. it's like, talk about another hero.
Great.
Oh, Amy Goodman.
Great.
Yeah.
So important to the movement. So to your question, I think that what's, you know, just a few things to note is that of the estimated 20 million of the 26 million who have been displaced since 2010 by climate change and environmental degradation, there is about 20 million of them are women. Okay, so that's about 80% of global climate refugees are women. So that's just to give some measure. And studies have revealed that women are more susceptible than men to the harmful effects of pollution in the air, water, and soil, not to mention the dangerous and deeply personal effects of toxins on pregnant women and their developing babies. We know that indigenous women who rely on nature and primary resources for their survival, as well as for their spiritual and cultural well-being, they find themselves directly threatened by industrial agriculture, fossil fuel extraction, and mega dams. And, you know, in frontline communities, gendered and sexual violence against indigenous women is also added on top of other dire impacts that are perpetuated by the industries that bear down on their homelands. As an example, you know, we did a whole report earlier on the man camps that follow a lot of the pipelines, the fossil fuel pipelines, or fracking and different oil extraction sites where, you know, these small communities that are often on indigenous lands, because it is indigenous people that are, you know, the ones usually on top of and protecting these forests or areas that have not been destroyed by modern civilization. They have these man camps come in where, you know, thousands of men will just like suddenly appear to work in these extractive industries, and it brings drugs and sexual violence to the communities, and it's very, very devastating. And it's something often not in the, you know, big media, but it's something very, very disastrous and horrible for these indigenous women living in these impacted communities. In developing countries, drought, flooding, and unpredictable temperatures put pressures on millions of women who, due to gender norms, it's very important to understand, due to being a woman, hold primary responsibility for providing food, water, and medicine and firewood for their families. You know, women are the backbone of their, just not their families, but their communities. So when you have these impacts, of course, it bears down on the women the most. And so really, when we analyze root causes, it's clear that women experience climate change with disproportionate severity, really precisely because at a global scale, their basic rights continue to be denied. Enforced gender inequality reduces women's physical and economic mobility. It reduces their voice, their ability to speak out. In many places, it makes them just so much more vulnerable to mounting environmental stresses. We know that, as an example, in Sri Lanka's 2004 tsunami, it killed about twice as many women as men, from reasons ranging from a lack of economic independence to actually never being allowed to learn how to swim, just because of, you know, women's rights issues and social norms. So these are very, very, you know, serious issues, obviously, and it really requires that we have a deep systemic understanding about climate change for long-lasting change. I think it's really essential that we recognize and understand that we have to transform these dominant social constructs, these patriarchies that really lie at the root of this gender inequality, as well as the destruction of the earth. I think we need to look at, you know, the systemic change and challenge old paradigms of colonization, imperialism, capitalism, and, as I said, patriarchy, which are really based in great part on power over women, people of color, and our earth. So I think there's also, you know, a connection here between violence against the earth and how it's directly linked to violence against women. And, you know, these constructs really have to change. And I think this is really at the core of a lot of, you know, the systemic analysis that we look at We Can, not just, you know, the immediate impacts and working every day as we do with the issues that we are facing and how we address them on the ground, but also the long-term view of, you know, what is the system change that we're looking at.
And, you know, if when you're answering, it's giving me chills and so fully present in terms of your observations, and I just think it's so serendipitous that I just returned from what I would call a very intense and yet another transformation in my life, spending time with the Achuar people deep, deep, deep within the rainforest. And to your point, I was with a woman named Katie Curran, who is an award-winning film documentary maker. She produced Greening the Revolution, and she was there. Part of her work is now, her next documentary is on sexual assault in cultures all over the world. And I was, we made a joke, I was kind of acting as her grip because it was her. And I listened in on some of the interviews. And to your point, Osprey, in cultures like this, which took us a short plane ride, a long canoe ride, and a very long hike deep into visit a tribe in a place called Tinkias with the Achuar, they talked about, they know what's going on. They have radio contact. They're very savvy about what's going on in the outside world. And they said there is no sexual assault in their tribes. There's no mental illness. There's no substance abuse until the roads come in. And just what you said, these men come in. And I mean, you're telling it, and I'm thinking, 2 weeks ago, I was sitting there hearing it from some very, very important and powerful people in my life forever. So it's so real from the front line, and we were treated with such respect and educated on what their fears are about, you know, encroachment of the oil companies, and their province has successfully fought it because of organizations like yours and the Pachamama Alliance and other groups that are saying, you know, if we destroy the rainforest, it's not just cultures, it's our future. It's our lives, it's our air, it's, you know, everything we breathe, and I know you and I share that. But we are going to go to our first break, and we have a lot more to talk about. I'd like to talk a little bit when we come back about the emerging role of women, not just in the Western world, but Indigenous women and much more. So everybody, stay here with me. Great interview with Osprey Oriel Lake from We Can. We'll be right back. Don't move.
Join us for a new on-demand podcast every week at MrsGreensWorld.com. Listen on your computer or mobile device using the iHeartRadio or SoundCloud mobile apps. We are a proud member of the iHeartRadio, Glimmerglass, and Speak Up networks. Connect with us on Facebook, Twitter, Pinterest, and Instagram. Stay in touch with information about healthy living, sustainability, contests, and events by signing up for our e-newsletter on our website. If you have questions or comments about the show, write to us at info@MrsGreensWorld.com. We'd love to hear from you. But right now, back to Mrs. Green.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Gina Murphy-Darling, and you are listening to Mrs. Green's World, where we don't tell you what to think. We just want you to. And I believe every week we give you something really important to think about and hopefully inspire you to act. Joining us for this hour is Osprey Oriel Lake. She is the co-founder and executive director of We Can, Women's Earth and Climate Action Network. We Can is a solutions-based, multifaceted effort established to engage women worldwide to take action as powerful stakeholders in climate change and sustainability solutions. We Can engages women grassroots activists, indigenous and business leaders, scientists, policymakers, farmers, academics, and culture shapers in collaboration with the goal of stopping the escalation of climate change and environmental and community degradation while accelerating the implementation of just climate solutions through women's empowerment, advocacy at international policy forums, trainings, on-the-ground projects, advocacy campaigns, and political, economic, and social and environmental action. Just think about everything that I just said about the important work they're involved in. And I think that the case can be made that We Can is doing some of the most important work on the planet on so many levels. And once again, Osprey, thanks for all the work you do and for the leadership you provide to help the world be healthier and more socially just for all of us. So I just certainly don't say that lightly. It was exciting preparing for this show and stuff, you know, came up for me about hope and good things that are going on. So from where you sit and from all of the international work you do, what is your read right now on the emerging role of women, and not just women in the Western world, but Indigenous women from around the globe? Are they organizing? Are their voices being heard more, having an impact? What's your read on what's going on?
Well, oh my goodness, there's so much. To broadly say that, in a variety of fields, women worldwide are modeling small-scale solutions with very large impacts, and I think that's something that's often overlooked in terms of how we're going to get to this healthier world that we want. I think because climate change and environmental degradation are such large-scale problems, solutions are often discussed in terms of these very big sweeping measures and top-down initiatives, which, of course, some we need. We need our governments involved. We need, to have, some of these large-scale solar projects, et cetera. However, we also need to remember that often it's precisely these large-scale, top-down, profit-driven processes that actually have led to the crisis that we're in the first place. And I think we have to have a deeper analysis to understand that fully engaging women's solutions to reclaim power at a local, community, and household level is really at the utmost of importance. Women's participation in decision-making has direct impact on climate change policy and action. Research involving 130 countries demonstrated that countries with larger numbers of female parliamentary representation are more likely to ratify international environmental treaties and really care about the things that most of us do, as women and mothers and caring for our communities. so I think from both, as I was mentioning, these sort of local solutions, which women have the social capital to do and are very engaged in, to sort of the policy level at a very large scale, there's so much that women are doing. It's very, very exciting. I think I would, you know, hone in most specifically around some of the work that we're very engaged in now more and more, which is, you know, seeing how to lift up the voices and advocacy of grassroots, frontline and Indigenous women who are, I think, not only being impacted the most, but also demonstrating solutions. Because, of course, you know, when you go to the front lines and people have to respond now, we're going to actually hear the calling for what's needed. You know, that's where the hurt is, if you will, and the harm is, I think, one of the most important places we need to be centering and paying attention to. You know, I've been deeply moved by the struggles of women on the front line, both in terms of the impacts of climate change, but also the extractive economy, and particularly Indigenous women. Last year and earlier this year, I have spent time at Standing Rock in North Dakota to support, bring supplies, and to record interviews with incredible Indigenous women at the front line of the Dakota Access Pipeline resistance effort, which now has, you know, really moved on to other pipelines across the country in the United States, and moved on to divestment campaigns, defunding the fossil fuel industry and the banks and insurance companies that are engaged in these practices, and just seeing this incredible movement of Indigenous rising. And I think it's very important to all of us to understand that and how women are often the backbone of these Indigenous movements. And I know that firsthand, and the communities themselves will tell you that, everywhere from the Americas to, as you were mentioning earlier, to, you know, Indigenous communities in the Global South, who we also work with and ally with, women in the Amazon rainforest. So I think, you know, probably one of the most important places of interaction and need for attention and visibility is in the front lines and with Indigenous women themselves. I think that we're seeing the voices of these women really shining boldly with dignity, wisdom, love, and strength in the midst of a really horrifying and unlawful violence by state and corporate actors here in the United States and in countries around the world. And as I say, I think it's important for us to pay attention to this because 80% of the biodiversity left on Earth right now, 80% is in the hands of Indigenous peoples. And a lot of that is because of their worldviews and how they've been living for a long time and their understanding of environmental practices or, as they may say, you know, traditional ecological knowledge. So I think one of the most important things we can be doing is listening to Indigenous people and finding out how to be good allies and to support their efforts.
And, you know, timing is everything. And again, to your point, it's so serendipitous to me that this interview is timed with my return trip. And an example of that, you know, the Pachamama Alliance funded a program called Jungle Mamas. And it's basically designed to eliminate the preventable deaths in pregnancy, of which there are still many, and childbirth of this particular tribe, the Achuar mothers and babies, and to, you know, improve community health. And for us, for you and me and people that are would fit our, you know, demographic or psychographic, what's the big deal? For Achuar women to have, we interviewed a 19-year-old shy, you know, young lady, I think she might have even been 18, Marisol. She enrolled in the program and was trained on the whole Jungle Mamas program and how to do it. So those are what you talk about, grassroots, frontline, having an impact of a global nature because of something that's going on locally. So it's really exciting to me. And speaking of exciting, let's get to one of the most exciting things. Well, you know, I'm starved for good news. I admit it. I'm going right out there and saying, if you turn on any media in our country these days, there's not a lot of that. And one of my favorite questions to ask when I'm talking to people who have interesting and impactful stories is, who's telling your story? Who's spreading the word about the important work you're doing, the impact you're having? How do people find out about you? So we can, has done something spectacular and major about that. You just launched an exciting initiative called Women Speak, Stories, Case Studies, and Solutions from the Front Lines of Climate Change. I wish we had a drum roll because it really is exciting. So tell us what it is, how it came about, why it's so important. That's three, boom, boom, boom. But I can remember the questions. You have to be over the top excited.
Yeah, we're very, very thrilled about this. We've been working on this for over a year, almost 2 years now. Women Speak, Stories, Case Studies, and Solutions from the Front Lines of Climate Change. Basically, it's an online research storytelling database, an initiative that is designed to really shift the dominant narrative and challenge systems of exploitation and oppression of Earth and our communities and women by sharing and bringing critical attention to, seriously, the countless stories of women leading diverse struggles and solutions for climate justice around the world. So the database is free online. Anyone can go to it. And it's designed to collect and share thousands of links to stories, articles, research documents, policy papers, video, blogs, podcasts, every resource basically that's online. And different platforms to have this collection so that everyone can see not just the quantitative analysis, meaning all the statistics I was sharing earlier about why women are key to sustainability solutions, but actually to show the qualitative analysis, the actual story, so that people can learn together, you know, what women are actually doing. We've been fortunate to have researchers from all over the world help us collect these stories, and the goal is to really create a very accessible, and it will be a continuing growing source of information and research so that, you know, policymakers, frontline earth defenders, journalists, activists, educators, students, everyone can understand and demonstrate why and how women are central to climate justice, solutions around climate change that really protect the web of life itself. So we're really thrilled about this. We've just gotten so much attention from around the world on this because I think people really are hungry for, you know, these stories and understanding what women are doing. We know these stories need to be heard. When we talk specifically about climate, we know that, as an example, CNN and Media Matters have reported, for example, that only 15% of those interviewed in the media on climate change have been women. So I think we need to get way past that 15%.
You think it's like it makes me so annoyed and angry.
Yeah.
And when it comes to climate scientists, I mean, some of the greatest, even with doing Google searches and my traveling around the country, women are at the forefront. Women climate scientists are at the forefront. And who gets interviewed? Even, I have to say this, I don't want to say anything negative about Inconvenient sequel Truth to Power, but even in that, I was with some women climate scientists like Diana Liverman, who was at Oxford, and some other women, you know, and we just came out after the movie and said, you know, there were some glaring omissions in that movie, even though its impact is important. So back to this Women Speak. Is it your hope and is it of critical importance that more alliances will be formed now? I use as an example, I think it's Rockefeller funded, the Rockefeller Foundation funded the 100 Cities Initiative. And I track that. And we just had someone on from Pittsburgh, because what they wanted was for cities that are really trying to prepare for the ravages of climate change, learn from each other. They don't duplicate efforts. Is it your hope that a platform like this will help strengthen and build alliances that are so critical at this point?
Sure. I mean, as you yourself were talking earlier about the summit that we put together with all the women from around the world, I mean, there's just, we've heard, you know, wonderful testimony from you and many women about what got generated that continues on to this day from that gathering.
Yes.
We're also finding through, you know, webinars that we do and even our newsletter, the connections, you know, the connections that are happening as we see in nature that a healthy ecosystem is one that has a lot of diversity connecting to more diversity. And so I think it's very important to have a database like this so people can see the huge plethora of information in, we have 15 different categories, you know, from women in forests and biodiversity to frontline resistance to policymaking in these different categories, so people can take a deep dive into the area that interests them, but also see all the other arenas where women are working. And the program, it provides immediate education and plans for local and international action through stories. It also is designed to facilitate conversations between community-based women and policymakers at all levels and between women leaders and, you know, everyone in diverse contexts. And I think by linking women through these stories around the world, it will really provide good information exchanges, and people will be able to share their strategies and learn from each other's best practices and coordinate agendas. I mean, that's, you know, part of what we want to provide is, you know, access to the information, but also help each other to connect. And I think there's tremendous power, as you know, from your show in storytelling and how it can generate, you know, responses to climate change. In addition to solution stories, we understand, you know, all too well the huge need to give voice to moral and emotional reactions to climate change and the directive experience of women on the front lines, which are often suppressed or seen of lesser importance. You know, and we want that to be there. I think, you know, one of the things I've seen in the work that I do, too, is that, you know, not only are women providing these incredible on-the-ground solutions around food, water, and energy, and fighting for justice in their communities, I think there's something else that women are bringing to the conversation that I don't think should be left out, and that's our emotional and spiritual intelligence. I've been to so many international forums where the most impactful work has been women conveying, you know, our deep and fierce love for our children, their future, for our homelands, and the very web of life itself. And so, you know, and to do so in public spaces as a political strategy and speak truth to power. And I think sometimes these kind of emotional and spiritual statements, we're told that it's just too soft or it's not appropriate for public discourse on climate change. And yet, you know, I mean, if we're not supposed to get emotional about, you know, our very life, I'm not sure what we're supposed to get emotional about and shake people up. So I think also part of the storytelling component, you know, reaches into the scientific analysis, on-the-ground solutions, but also speaking from the heart and the need to break down barriers and have breakthroughs through, you know, hearing directly from women and their personal experience. I think it's absolutely essential.
And the timing, I mean, I'd like to ask you about just a comment about even what happened with the recent developments with Harvey Weinstein. It is a good moment for women, and women are coming out and saying this is what's been happening to us, and it does speak to the pain and the emotional scars and all of that. But more importantly, things like Standing Rock, the group I was with in Ecuador, we had lots of time to talk at night because there was no electricity, no gizmos, no anything. We were in community. And we talked about Standing Rock as really a critical moment in history, because even though the ultimate outcome was they proceeded 8 months, they delayed things for 8 months, and a lot of things happened in terms of alliances and tribes coming together and people coming from all over the world to take a stand against the big corporate bullies that care about one thing, money. That's it. So do you agree about Standing Rock being hopefully a stellar moment that there will be more of because of people's courage?
Well, absolutely. I think it's epic. It's historic. I think it's part of, you know, as Indigenous people around the world have said, is part of even the prophecies of many Indigenous peoples about this moment and the importance of the wisdom of Indigenous peoples coming forward at this time. And I do think it's a historic moment, and it continues. That movement is only building.
Right.
Very recently, I've actually just come back very recently from a delegation that our organization organized, bringing Indigenous women from Standing Rock, or those who are part of the Standing Rock movement, to go on a divestment delegation to Norway, Switzerland, and Germany. And we actually, this is the second one we've done. So this year we have dedicated a great deal of our time at WECAN to organizing these divestment delegations so that Indigenous women can directly go to the banks and insurance companies that funded the Dakota Access Pipeline, or companies like Energy Transfer Partners.
Okay, hold that thought. We have to go to break, but we'll be right back.
Mrs. Green's world's mission is to preserve the planet by creating a global community of people who care about the health of the earth. We educate, inform, and inspire. Mrs. Green's World is an independent, non-political, agenda-free voice. Your generous gift enables all of us to explore the issues facing the health of the planet in a comprehensive way. As a Mrs. Green's World sustainer, you can assist us in offering trusted information, providing listeners with the tools to make their own conclusions and choose their own steps to create a healthier planet. Visit MrsGreensWorld.com and click on Become a Member today.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Gina Murphy-Darling, and this is Mrs. Green's World, and thanks for being a part of it. We've been talking this hour about women, keepers of the earth, and joining me and sharing some pretty amazing and hopeful stories is someone who knows quite a bit about that. Her name is Osprey Oriel Lake. She is the co-founder and executive director of WECAN, Women's Earth and Climate Action Network. Osprey works nationally and internationally with grassroots and indigenous leaders, policymakers, and scientists to promote climate justice, resilient communities, and a just transition to a clean energy future. And as I said, noteworthy to me, she invited me to Women of the Earth and Climate Initiative Summit, where I did meet both Dr. Jane Goodall and Vandana Shiva, and quite frankly, the experience was a game changer for me and the Mrs. Green's World team. And like you said, Ariel, the most important thing is the pebble and the pond, and look at Standing Rock. So if you want to have any final comments on that, please do. We had to cut you off because I wasn't good at saying, okay, we got to go to break, because I was so listening to the story.
Sure. Well, I just wanted to say that, WECAN has been very honored to organize these Indigenous women's divestment delegations to Europe. And one of the things that's been very powerful is that the women have been able to meet directly with the banks and insurance companies and different government leaders who were engaged in, not the government leaders, but the banks and the insurance companies in supporting the companies that finance the Dakota Access Pipeline, and be able to directly speak to them at the table, at their front door, about the Indigenous rights and human rights violations that occurred at Standing Rock, and really demand that there be accountability and a change in the guidelines and standards of these financial institutions so that something as egregious as Standing Rock never happens again. And it's been an incredible journey to see these powerful women, Michelle Cook, Tara Hauska, LaDonna Allard, so many others that also came with us, that were able to so powerfully move through their direct stories of either having human rights violations happen to them or through their observations, and really be able to see how those stories directly impact these institutions. And, you know, that fight will go on, and we've had some really excellent success. And I know we don't have time to go into that, but people can go to our website and learn more about some of the articles that were written about these delegations. I think the most important thing is the power of the Indigenous women, their voices, and bringing the fight right to, you know, the financial institutions who are impacting their lands and their lives. And they're really in a fight for life and death here. And I think it's really important that we support them.
And it ties back so perfectly to the role and the importance of Women Speak, because that documentation, it won't require 50 Google searches. I mean, if all of this is put into this powerful database and is accessible, free and accessible to anyone, it's so important, especially when we're living in a country where we're not even allowed to speak about climate change if we're applying for federal funds, but we don't want to get off on that tangent, right? We really don't, because this is all...
Well, no. I mean, let's just not even talk about this administration, because that takes at least 10 hours just there. About the disaster this administration is to forward motion on the issues that we care about in so many arenas that are all very connected. I mean, we're all fighting whether whatever... our issues are, we're fighting these same systems of oppression at this point, and we need to work, you know, with immigrant rights, workers' rights, human rights. You know, it's all deeply connected. But I will say that the Women Speak Project, we're very excited about, because it is an opportunity to have hope, an opportunity to see these stories. We also welcome your listeners and passing it on to others who are doing work around what women are doing in the arena of climate change and environmental degradation to send in their stories. It's an ever-growing database. So not only can people go there to learn about all these different amazing women and hear about their stories, learn and get excited about solutions that you can bring to your own community, but to know that you can also send in stories. And we do have, you know, a criteria, of course, of the stories that we're accepting, but we do invite others to do that. And, you know, just to mention that one of the things that was very key about the Women Speak Project is that we made a decision early on. I really wanted this to be that these were stories with a climate justice framework. So it is, and we're very transparent about stating that on the website, that, you know, it's not that we chose any story about any woman connected to the environment, because we don't want to further, you know, capitalistic notions that we're going to buy our way, as an example, out of climate change, or stories of greenwashing within corporations. These stories have been very done in a very curated way, so that when you read it, to the best of our abilities, we really worked to provide just solutions, just transitions to a new future that's really healthy for people and planet.
And one of the things that I think is, again, an important role for us as Mrs. Green's World with our growing connections is when I interview guests, I can bring this up and really advocate for getting their stories presented and documenting the work we're doing. We have a very powerful executive director to the YWCA here who's making national news and has partnered with the YWCA up in Phoenix. And she is kick-ass. There's no other way to say it. And they have a very strategic plan to take Arizona by storm. And I've been to a lot of the planning meetings, and it's a very thorough, well-thought-out strategy for how to change things at the local level, including our elections. And with the announcement recently about Jeff Flake, how imperative is it for us to get out there and really have our voices be heard for what things we believe in? So, and then having a place to put it is what I see as Women Speak. It's a place to put that so other women who want to do the same things can. One of the biggest challenges that I think great initiatives like this have is vying for space on a very crowded platform called the internet. Tell us about the launch and the big boom and, you know, how you're creating the excitement around this and getting other people around the world to connect.
Well, we're very thrilled that Ms. Magazine is doing a big spread on the project, which we find that to be really exciting and hopeful.
Yes. Yeah,
that's really good news. And other media outlets as well. And I'm speaking to you here from Bonn, Germany, during the UN climate negotiations. And, of course, we're in a great international space to continue to launch the project as well. So we're with, you know, international actors and allies that we are also able to distribute and share the new project as well. So I feel like, of course, we need support from everyone to continue to help us with the launch. But I think that this has been a really good opportunity for us to launch it during one of the climate negotiations.
It's really awesome. And you know how much I wish I was there. It's like someday, it's like I want to just follow Osprey around for about 6 months and just really attribute to all the work you're doing. So speaking of Osprey, in the personal arena, I really would like to know if you want to share some thoughts about if someone says to you over a glass of wine, Osprey, what are some of your biggest concerns? Do you think we need to be focusing on the oceans, or do you think we need to be focusing on preservation of the rainforest or the rights of Indigenous women? Do you have a sense of the more critical issues we need to look at, or do you think it's more important to have an integrated mindset when it comes to all of this?
Well, you know, I would say that it's a couple things. One, I think people need to work on issues. I know that people say this, but it's very true, that they're passionate about, because we have to be there for the long run.
Yes, yes.
Thus, it is so important that we tie ourselves to something we really care about. So even if someone sort of says, you know, this is the most important thing, you know, that can be a very external comment versus something very internal, which is sort of learning about the different issues and then finding the ones that we think we can really put our heart and soul into, because these, we're in a very, very deep hole. And so we are going to all need to be able to go for the long run, which means we have to have our heart involved, our passion involved, to maintain the level of work it really requires. So that would be sort of like my first go at a response to your question. You know, beyond that, yes, I do, you know, personally feel very passionate about Indigenous rights. I think that, as mentioned, the fact that the biodiversity is in the Indigenous lands, I also think that there is a terrible injustice happening to frontline communities, whether it's Indigenous peoples, women of color in communities all over the world, women in developing countries. I think that they're really on the bad end of the stick, and we all need to stand up for them and use our privilege, if we're not women of color, to do something to support those on the front lines. I think that's what we really need to do. It's not only because it's the right thing and the moral thing to do, which, you know, should be enough. It's also because I think we have the most to learn from, and the solutions that are really going to be ones that are just and fulfilling for people and planet are coming from the front line. So I would say that's another arena of great import, is the frontline communities, Indigenous rights, and lifting up women in those communities. I also would specifically say, here in the United States, which is impacting the world, we better fight like hell for our democracy. For the first time this year, we've really brought issues of women running for office and issues of what democracy means and how do we reclaim and renew our democracy in the United States, because, you know, we're not going to get anywhere if we don't have a democracy. And so I would also just highlight that this administration is now causing all of us to have to double time in the issues that we're very concerned about concerning the environment, but also to get deeply engaged in the political process, in the electoral process, because we're in grave danger, and we really, really need to step forward in that way.
I just can't, you know, it cannot be emphasized too much. I was at a sustainable living forum that we host with some other partners here in my community last night, and I said, you know what, folks, we are in the fight of our lives. There's no bones about it, and it's inconvenient, but be inconvenienced. Go to that rally, sign that petition, call that senator like never before. And you're right, fight like hell, because if not, a lot of it will be eroding before we know it. And it's just, some days I think this can't be happening. I landed somewhere else, and it is in fact happening. So if you believe in democracy and don't want to have the erosion of your rights accelerate, get involved. I mean, every show I do, it's a call to action. Let's switch for a minute to social justice. When I started this over 10 years ago, and honestly and truly, you know, go to the rainforest, come back and say, I think I'll start a radio show. That's still part of my story. I didn't really know what I was doing. And I've spent the past 10 years educating myself, and my team is amazing. Social justice in the past 4 or 5 years has become such a critical part of the conversation. It's not just about the oceans or the forests or, you know, food safety, whatever. Social justice. So talk about your spin on, do you think it needs to be a part of every conversation when it comes to climate change?
Absolutely. I think that, you know, this whole notion of environment separate from people is completely outdated and misconstrued, really. you know, we need to understand that, you know, when we're talking about climate change, we're talking about people. And when we're talking about people, we're talking about climate change, you know, and those solutions have to fit both people and planet. So I think that, you know, there's just this false notion of these separations. And I think a lot of the environmental movement got caught up in that, again, because of white privilege and not being on the front lines. And so it's like, let's go ahead and save nature, but not the people who are being impacted by the result of pollution and the devastation to the earth, because they live off someplace in some other, you know, not near where we're seeing what's happening in their communities, whether it's in the Amazon or in the Congo or wherever. So I think that, you know, it's a very outdated idea. And right now we need to understand that social and ecologic justice and social ecologic solutions are really where we need to be standing now, and particularly with solidarity with the frontline communities.
And, you know, my editorial comment on We Can and Women Speak is, it really is part of the solution to help stop or at least minimize some of the carnage against women and children in our own country, and of women of color, men of color. So to me, people getting engaged with this and the timing of the show could not be more perfect. And we don't have a lot of time left, and time does fly when you're talking about important issues like this that ignite and excite me. Take the rest of the time to share with us, give us why you have such hope for our planet in the future. What are movements that you're keeping your eye on or progress that's being made? You spoke about some of them, grassroots, local level. Give us some good news, and then the call to action, how to connect, and why it's so important for people to listen to this show, share this show, and get involved with We Can and Women Speak. It's all yours.
All right. Well, thank you. Thank you so much for having me on your show and just all your inspiration. And I think that brings a lot of hope. Look, let's face it. I think that things are going to continue to become very difficult. I think that's an important thing to not pretend. I mean, look at the hurricanes, the flooding, the fires in the U.S. And, of course, we could talk about countries all over the world. I mean, we're in climate change. It's not coming.
Right.
It's here. So we're there, and people need to shore up, you know, create close community, figure out what their plans are for urgent situations in their communities. I think that we cannot pretend that it's, you know, going to all work out nice. I think it's a very difficult situation and can be life-threatening, and that's where we are. In terms of the hope aspect, I mean, I have deep hope in humanity. I mean, I see, you know, we just saw the fires here in California, what people are willing to do to support each other in a crisis situation. I see that with the frontline women I work with all over the world, the strength, the power, the vision, the dedication, the incredible courage. I'm very hopeful about the fact that, you know, yes, I don't like this current administration, but it has thrown everybody into a new awakening. And I think it's critical for people to understand the urgency of the moment and then realize that, you know, they can do something about it, that they must do something about it, that it's time for everyone to get off the sidelines. So I'm very hopeful also because of, you know, the Women Speak Project that we mentioned, and literally seeing hundreds and hundreds of stories of women seed saving in this drought condition, growing this kind of food, women and their resistance efforts to save rivers, women planting trees all over the world. I just could go on and on. There's just so many incredible stories about the strength and wisdom of people in their communities growing food and caring for forests. And I think the big thing is that we need to unite together to do something about this capitalist economy that, you know, is dependent on endless economic growth that we cannot afford on a finite planet, and these corporate structures. I mean, I think we need to realize that we need to unite to ensure that we are not taken down by these systems of oppression and these economic structures that are devastating.
It's not sustainable, and that's the last word. You can find all you want to know about this at wecaninternational.org, and check out my website for really exciting upcoming shows that really matter. Thanks for being a part of our world, and Osprey, thank you so much for all you're doing and for sharing this hour with us. Make it a great green, intentionally lived week, everybody.